general teaching is Epstein-Barr is this insidious virus. It's very common. 60% of the population plus gets infected with it. And it can, you know, live latent in our nerve cell ganglia in our body. And if you get another infection like SARS-CoV-2, or you get really, you know, stressed and your immune system becomes suppressed, you get exposed to, you know, some environmental toxins, mold or something like that, something else that is driving down your immune system, there becomes the potential that that Epstein-Barr virus could come roaring out of latency and cause, you know, a systemic flare, and you are, you know, you're basically suffering mono all over again.
This is the Otto Community Podcast. All interviews presented on the Otto Community Podcast are designed to provide information and inspiration only. Guests of the podcast may present opinions and anecdotes that are solely their own. And as always, before beginning any treatment protocol, consult with your preferred medical provider. Hey everyone, welcome to the Otto Community Podcast. My name is Erin, and today's guest is Dr. Jim Meehan. Dr. Meehan and I met not too long ago at an event up in his state of Oklahoma, and I had a great time interacting with him, doing a really intriguing grand rounds up there on the stage, and I'm really excited to have him on the show. So thanks for being here, Dr. Meehan.
Oh, it's an honor, Erin. It's great to meet and see you again and learn from each other and try to help more people, especially at a time like this when it sure seems like people are suffering like never before.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Unfortunately, I wish that weren't the case. But so one of the things I think is very timely and pertinent to my particular audience is this whole idea of long COVID. I know from myself personally, I dealt with this, never was vaccinated, but I did get COVID twice. And the first time really kind of knocked me down quite a bit. I had some very disturbing symptoms, very, very high fever, 105 fever for several days, body aches and pains. However, I do have a lot of autoimmune issues. So I knew that that was a potential, and then, you know, suffered with quite a bit of fatigue and things like that for quite a while afterwards. So what kinds of things are you seeing come across your doorstep, and what do you make of all of this?
Well, number one, I mean, it was a bioweapon. It was that virus. They took a coronavirus and they put a furin cleavage domain in that virus. It was clearly inserted. This is gain of function kind of technology. That furin cleavage domain makes it a much more problematic virus to deal with. So it was a problem, especially that Delta variant and the predecessors, the original Wuhan strain, all the way up to Delta. And then we were lucky when the virus mutated to the Omicron strain, and it became less capable of causing damage deep in the lower lungs, where it was predominantly, it was really causing trauma to the deep lung tissue. But the virus, you know, and it also had a shorter phase of viral replication. So it went from about 10 or 11 days to about 5 or 6 days. But afterwards, I mean, after any significant, you know, infection, and especially one that's been weaponized with a furin cleavage domain, it's this little piece that they inserted in there made it much more invasive, much more capable of it causing damage, entering the cell, replicating. And when they did that, when they weaponized it with that, they took coronavirus, a common cold virus, and they turned it into something that was really problematic. The damage that can be done to the human body as that spike protein is binding to your ACE2 receptors, they're everywhere in the body. And by the way, this is not just a lung. It was not just a lung virus. It was a virus that would enter through the lungs, but once it started replicating, it gets into the vascular system and then it spreads everywhere. And depending on how broadly it spread, and a lot of that had to do with where was your vitamin D levels, where was your You know, where was your general health? How susceptible to any pathogen on the planet? So, you know, if you had a vitamin D level of 17 nanograms per deciliter or less, you were set up for bad disease. Doesn't matter whether it was influenza, RSV, or SARS-CoV-2. If you didn't have a vitamin D level of, you know, say 60 or greater, you could have a very significant broad replication and spread throughout your body, hitting tissues like ovaries and, you know, heart and everything else. So depending on just how, you know, how broadly that thing took a hold of you. And quite honestly, we're doing some things that were just stupid. Wearing masks. Let me tell you, wearing masks was, I'm working on a presentation right now. I call it masked menticide, meaning, you know, I think we were literally, it was so anti-science propaganda to say, wear a mask with a respiratory virus that aerosolizes. It's small aerosolized viral particles, infectious particles can float in the air. They can bypass that mask. They can blow right through it. But, you know, probably more likely they go in and around as you're breathing and trying to suck air past that barrier. You're breathing those viral particles right in. So it's not protecting you. But what it's really doing is, you know, you're rebreathing those viral particles. That little face diaper that, you know, brought some people so much peace. I don't know why, but it was menticide. It was, you know, it was brainwashing. But you're wearing that little face diaper. You should be exhaling those viral particles and then dropping to the ground and being neutralized. But instead, you're capturing them. You are rebreathing them right down deeper into the lungs. And so that was increasing your viral load. You know, a lot of it has to do how severe the disease is how significant was your viral load.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But afterwards, yeah. Oh, go ahead, Erin.
Well, what I was going to say, two things. So first of all, you know, the mask thing never made sense to me. And right. I think, you know, as a mother of a child who has suffered with things like streptococcal infections and staph and things like that, where they are creating a neuroimmune response in the brain, there was no way I was going to put a mask on my child. So ultimately, you know, I said I have a religious exemption. I'm part of the unmasketarian religion. Thank you very much.
Right. Yes.
You know, but secondly, to your point about the viral load. So interestingly enough, for myself, post-COVID, I have Epstein-Barr and I had diagnosed mono at 18 years old. So, you know, I was familiar with my Epstein-Barr titers and things like that. I pull them every so often, pulled them again after having COVID and noticed my numbers had, you know, skyrocketed through the roof all over again, as well as several other viral components that I hadn't had in the past. I mean, so I do think that those particular viruses were, you know, in my system previously, and that COVID then reactivated those, you know, viral components, the retrovirus. So
totally.
Can you speak a little bit to that? Are you seeing those kinds of numbers come through your office as well?
Well, first thing I would say is, you know, Epstein-Barr virus, and I will be honest with you. I am in an area of cognitive dissonance about the whole viral, you know, germ theory versus terrain theory.
Right
now, one of the things I've had to do in medicine is I've had to be skeptical about everything that I've learned. So much of what I was taught in medical school and residency was wrong. Serotonin deficiency as a cause of depression, you know, Alzheimer's caused by, you know, amyloid plaques and beta sheeted, you know, so much of that was fraud. You know, what I was taught about vaccines was childhood vaccines in particular was just not much, number one, but really based on really, you know, what I would call tobacco science. And so I'm in a place now where I've realized that I have to live in two worlds. So I'm going to talk and I'm going to respond to your question in the general belief system that there are these viral, you know, pathogens that float around. And so let's talk in terms that those terms, but I will tell you that viral isolation and meeting all the postulates of identifying, purifying a pathogen. We're not doing that with viruses. So, you know, I'm in this very difficult place where I haven't done enough deep research and had all my questions answered by the virologist, but, I'm there. I'm battling with it. So I'm going to just address it from what probably is the general belief system, the one that I was taught, but about viruses like Epstein-Barr. So the general teaching is Epstein-Barr is this insidious virus. It's very common. 60% of the population plus gets infected with it, and it can, you know, live latent in our nerve cell ganglia in our body. And if you get another infection like SARS-CoV-2, or you get really, you know, stressed and your immune system becomes suppressed, you get exposed to, you know, some environmental toxins, mold or something like that, something else that is driving down your immune system, there becomes the potential that that Epstein-Barr virus could come roaring out of latency and cause, you know, a systemic flare, and you are, you know, you're basically suffering mono all over again. And now you've got two infections going on at the same time. And, you know, general teaching again is Epstein-Barr probably triggers 1/3 of all autoimmune conditions. So I think it has to be, you know, I think it has to be kind of, you know, dealt with. I'll tell you, you know, I don't want to jump too far, but people want solutions. I use ivermectin a lot now to keep that virus under suppression. You know, I consider ivermectin a broad spectrum antiviral. It's not just a horse dewormer like our FDA so negligently, fraudulently tried to brainwash it into believing. It's a broad spectrum antiviral. And so I recommend it, you know, in times of stress for somebody that has demonstrated positive titers of Epstein-Barr. I think, you know, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, quercetin, all of those things that we use to treat primary infections now with SARS-CoV-2 and ivermectin, they could be very useful. I keep ivermectin ready supply in the medicine cabinet at home to, you know, I diagnosed my daughter's Epstein-Barr. She had massive lymph nodes under one of her arms just the other day. And I was like, honey, you know, let's do some titers. That's probably Epstein-Barr. That's why you're feeling so miserable. Sure enough, massive titers, round of ivermectin. She no longer had to hold her arm out because those two massive lymph nodes were causing her so much pain. But so you got to keep those things under, you know, under treatment, under control. But that, there's something unique about this SARS-CoV-2 and this spike protein and its ability to kind of cause long COVID type symptoms, a prolongation of the inflammatory cytokine storm that goes on. The work of Dr. Bruce Patterson showed that fragment of the spike protein kind of gets stuck in one of the cell lines we call monocytes, one of your white blood cells, causing that spike protein to hold that monocyte into a, like it's fighting the viral infection, like you were on day one or two of the infection. It's just pumping out all these cytokines to help your, you know, body fight the infection, but it's doing it for like days, weeks, months after the primary infection. And we got to help the body to get rid of those damaged, abnormally acting monocytes. And the things that the best group on this is the Frontlines Critical Care Collaboration, the group by, you know, kind of founded by Paul Merrick and Pierre Corey, where we try to upregulate. And I was one of the first, you know, five physicians on that list saying, yeah, I'm not going to just not treat patients, tell them there's nothing that you can do, go home until you can't breathe. No, we're going to try to figure out ways to treat this infection, this pneumonia, and keep you out of the hospital. Seemed like they just wanted you in the hospital. And, you know, we know how that ended up for so many people. Let me come back to the bacterial pneumonia finding of the most recent studies that are showing same things we found in 1918. It looks like most of the people that died in hospitals died of a secondary bacterial pneumonia.
Yeah.
So, but before we go to that, let's come back to this issue of this virus and the damage it was causing. You know, for some people, that viral replication phase, maybe it was 10 days with Delta and its predecessors, or 5 or 6 days, they can have such a, you know, robust replication spreading from cell to cell that they can have a lot of monocytes that are, you know, have what your white blood cells are doing is they're ripping that virus to, you know, 1,000 pieces, memorizing every one of them. And some of your cells, like your monocytes, will retain some of those, the debris, the fragments, the trash. And we got to help your body get rid of that trash, especially in the monocytes, get rid of the abnormally acting monocytes. And we have a system in your body called autophagy, autophagy, self-eating or self-cleansing. And autophagy can be upregulated by a lot of things that are really benign, like intermittent fasting, sauna therapy, resveratrol, spermidine, a molecule found in things like grapefruits that upregulate your natural cleansing, purging, you know, old cells, senescent cells that need to go, helping your body just kind of purge itself of the dead debris and cells that just, you know, their utility is gone. It's time to get rid of them and let the new ones come in. That's a really powerful way to get out of that long COVID a little bit faster, or sometimes a lot faster. So that's big approach right now is upregulate autophagy.
Are you seeing issues with mitochondria? Because I know for myself, you know, I ended up having to, the thing that really pulled me out of all of this, especially the fatigue, was the amino acids. So I was using inositol and glycine, and those two in particular were really helpful for me in order to pull me out of that. So are you seeing a decrease in mitochondrial function or ATP production? What are you seeing with
let's face it, mitochondria, the attack on the mitochondria is an unknown, you know, they're being attacked from 1,000 different directions. You know, mitochondria are the little cellular energy, the little organelles that turn oxygen into ATP. You know, ATP is the currency of energy in your cells. You know, number one, when you're going through that respiratory inflammation, when your lungs are thickening and edematous, you can't get oxygen to those mitochondria adequately very often. You know, home oxygen saved a lot of lives. Many people could have avoided hospitalization completely if instead of their doctor saying, "We got nothing for you, there's nothing I can do for you, just wait until your lips turn blue and you can't breathe and then go to the hospital." If they would have simply just ordered home oxygen for those patients, got them through that critical period of cytokine storm and, you know, the massive inflammation in the lungs where they were just so incapable of delivering oxygen from room air, and just got them some extra oxygen, 2 liters per minute with home oxygen, we could have saved a lot of lives there too. But mitochondria are under attack from a lot of toxins just in our general environment. You know, I mean, we live in a world that's more toxic than at any time in the history of the world. They're dropping aluminum nanoparticles from the skies. You know, our food supply has become a toxic mess. The glyphosates, the atrazines, the BPAs, all of these things are attacking our mitochondria in so many different ways. So everything that we can do to improve mitochondria is a way to improve, you know, your cellular ability to energize and fuel all the restorative repair mechanisms that a cell needs to go through, right? So, you know, coenzyme Q10, huge, NAD, NMN. Interestingly, they took NMN, I can't remember what the nicotinamide is for NMN, but they took that off the market recently, or really restricted access to an over-the-counter supplement that has tremendous benefits at the level of the mitochondria. Methylene blue, another really interesting molecule for improving mitochondrial function. You know, bottom line, if you can improve mitochondrial function, if you can, you know, create countermeasures to all the things that are damaging our mitochondria, you can probably improve every tissue in the body just by allowing those mitochondria to work better.
Right.
It's a complex area of medicine, but it's an area that should be of primary interest and support. And you're going to have to do your own research because they don't train my profession on any of these things. They really don't. Like I said, I've had to unlearn most of the stuff that I was taught in medicine and relearn stuff that really has, you know, more of an evidence basis for it than the nonsense they're doing when you allow a pharmaceutical company to conduct their research behind closed doors and tell us about it with press releases. Sound familiar?
That's what they've been, exactly. Well, I mean, it wasn't that long ago they pulled NAC off the market, for example, same exact idea, you know, NAC, which I use a lot personally. And I do make recommendations professionally as well, because it's so great for as an anti-inflammatory for a lot of these people. So,
well, and you also, you know, you have to look at the NEC is, you're right, is so important. I think it's a, you know, a foundational, a baseline supplement, and should be for a lot of people, because it provides the rate limiting step in the creation of glutathione. And we have a population of, you know, in the population, genetic mutations, point mutations, and important enzymes like the MTHFR mutation, that's like 40 to 50% of the population has genetic mutations in that enzyme. And that's an important enzyme for creating neurotransmitters, hormones, and a very important end molecule in that pathway is glutathione. And NAC provides one of the three, and it's the rate limiting steps of the one of the three essential amino acids in the creation of glutathione. So it's a, you know, if you're dealing with inflammation, the inflammation of an infection like COVID or autoimmunity, NAC should be, you know, someplace probably in your regimen and provide, because lots of times what your body needs is just raw materials. You know, it's the old adage of let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. And we just, you know, our food has become, as I said before, toxic waste. You know, pretty soon it'll be bugs and lab grown Gates Foundation meat. And we won't live on that. We're not living very well on, you know, the poison food that we're, that our food supply has become. So you're going to have to do some targeted supplementation with things. And NAC should be a huge part of it. Get your glutathione levels up. You don't have to measure them. You just need to optimize them. Give your body the raw materials that it needs. And sometimes the best way to do that is with some targeted supplementation with things like NAC. When I had COVID, Aaron, I was doing subcutaneous injections of glutathione, about 100 milligrams of a, you know, self-injected, just subcutaneous. You can also get it from an IV. You know, it costs you, you know, it's like a $75 add to right. add it to an IV infusion. So you get it for one day, but you know, you can go to meandmd.com. I can send you a prescription for a compounded vial, 10 milligram, 10 milliliter vial of glutathione. You can inject it, you know, half cc daily for 5 days, 10 days, whatever, you know, whatever virus you're dealing with. And that upregulating your glutathione in that fashion can be a real game changer.
Yeah, absolutely. I know for myself, you know, I'm dealing with Epstein-Barr, and I also was diagnosed with Lyme disease. So, you know, lots of
another bioweapon.
Yeah.
Call what it is. Call them out.
Yeah. I've been hit by all the bioweapons. Yeah. Apparently they love me, but I don't particularly like them.
The enemy wants to take you out. Yeah, that's
it must be the big brains. I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
But ultimately, you know, I really do very well with regular IVs. And so I've done Myers cocktail for years, which contains vitamin C. I dose vitamin C as well as glutathione, and then and some NAD as well. So lots of those things I think are hugely important for people struggling with, you know, any kind of autoimmunity or, you know, pathogens that, you know.
Well, you know, it's like you mentioning IVs. If you ever get an IV, like a Myers cocktail, kind of replacing some of the multitude of baseline B vitamins, and you can add C and other things to it, but get a Myers cocktail sometime. And if you feel like remarkably better afterwards, it should tell you one thing: you're deficient in some of those things that you just got, you know, dumped into your bloodstream in a very high most bioavailable way that we have. And that should tell you that you're missing some things in your diet. And so focus on, you know, making sure you're consuming foods that have those raw materials, because our body needs the building blocks. Imagine the complexity of things that our body has to do, especially if it's fighting a serious infection, because you know, day two of fighting that infection, you are using up your, you know, limited supplies of things like vitamin C. That's why vitamin C was so important. You need vitamin C to replenish that whole glutathione potency. They got to start sharing methyl groups and electrons to restoke the, you know, rebuild your defense against everything that's being depleted. You know, at times of significant infection, inflammation, but what do they tell you? They tell you to do something that will always deplete your glutathione tragically. Do you know what that thing is? Tylenol.
Yeah.
They will tell you to take Tylenol, you know, oh, got to suppress your fever. No, nonsense. Stop suppressing your fever. Now, if it gets to be, you know, you're really pained, you're having 105 degree temperatures, maybe a little bit of Tylenol then, but boy, you better supplement with some glutathione, because Tylenol will suppress your liver's ability to produce that very important glutathione, you know, the fire department of your immune system and your detoxification systems. You need to replace that glutathione that Tylenol is stimulating. And that's an important point. Most of what everything that our body does during an acute infection is intentional. The temperature, you know, body intentionally raises your core body temperature. That's going to accelerate the movement of white blood cells, the flow of blood to the area of infection. It's going to create, you know, potentially an inhospitable temperature environment that the virus that melts the virus or the bacteria. Those things are intentional. You know, you got some mucus in your throat that's protecting in your airways. It's trying to protect those tissues from viral invasion. It's literally you're creating a kind of a protective layer so that virus has a much harder time to enter, you know, to access and enter those cells where it can replicate and cause more damage. So don't try to suppress your fever, take Mucinex. You're tolerate it for as much as you can, because those intentional responses to an infection, they're very purposeful, intentional. We're causing more damage than I think people realize, than the medical profession realizes, when we tell, you know, everybody take Tylenol, keep that fever, don't be afraid of a fever. When I get an infection, I wrap up in a bunch of blankets and a down sleeping bag and try to accentuate my body's, you know, temperature response, try to get over with it. You know, I'll be that first fever and I'm done, because I know how to, you know, mobilize the body's natural defenses and accentuate and help instead of hinder.
Yeah, Dr. Meehan, you're speaking like a good homeopath now.
Uh-huh, so. Yeah. Well, I have trained way outside of the Rockefeller medical business model. I mean, I really have, you know, that's the thing. I've done fellowships in nutrition and functional medicine, age management medicine. I'm always learning from my colleagues and alternative, you know, all of the areas of alternative medicine that the Rockefellers attempted to eradicate and destroy, so that allopathic and osteopathic medicine could, you know, be the pill pushers and that we are, that some of us are. You know, I've learned a lot from people like you, Aaron. I respect what you're doing. And here's the thing I know about homeopathy. It's not going to cause harm like so many of our super powerful, you know, medications do cause. And there's, you know, there's something to it. A lot of people would say, well, you know, show me the randomized controlled trials. And I said, yeah, you know, show me a homeopathic manufacturer or a nutritional supplement manufacturer that can, you know, gather together the millions of dollars that it takes to do that kind of a study. You know, I mean, sometimes we have to look at, you know, what's the risk analysis look like?
Right.
You know, because with something like this experimental gene therapy made by Pfizer and Moderna, that risk analysis was really poorly done. We're giving something that is increasing the rate of myocarditis in young men under the age of 20, you know, 16 to 24 by 133 times versus the virus. And they are already at a low risk, essentially anyone under the age of 40, about, you know, 0% risk of dying from SARS-CoV-2. But we're giving them an experimental vaccine that we won't know the full story on for about 10 years. You know, you look at homeopathic remedies, you look at, you know, vitamin D therapy, we could have probably saved 80% of the lives lost just by, you know, optimizing vitamin D to a 80 to 90 serum level. You know, so that's the risk analysis. We should be using things. And that's the thing about ivermectin. What's the risk? I mean, it's one of the safest medications on the planet. And, yeah, you know, for almost five decades of experience with it, the risk analysis is easy. And then, you know, when we attack inflammation, autoimmunity, infections from a multi-nutrient, multi-modal attack, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, some, you know, homeopathic remedies, the list goes on. Things that have very little risk, boy, it's just easy math to do. But I, you know, that's the thing about doctors and the medical establishment. I don't think they can do math. I, by the way, was an engineer before I was a physician. So I think we need more engineers in medicine, and we'd probably not, you know, we would not be doing such ridiculous things, you know, and that's what we did during the pandemic. Everybody got to see everything that we did, public health, CDC, NIH, you know, Fauci, World Health Organization, et cetera. If we did the opposite of everything they recommended, we would have had a much better outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting, you know, you bring up something that comes to my doorstep a lot is, you know, people, number one, will say, you know, that their immune system isn't functioning properly because they are having symptoms. And I say, actually, that's your immune system functioning. That yeah. means you have an immune system to fight off these infections. If you're not having symptoms, then we have a real problem.
Right.
You know, but essentially, you know, with homeopathic remedies, the whole idea is to uproot. You know, we're going to uproot what's going on within the system and bring it forward instead of suppressing. And so much of the typical conventional medicine approach deals with suppression of symptoms rather than allowing the body to express those things and push it out instead of suppress. Like one of the most difficult challenges that I face is when I see people who've been on a lot of steroids, for example, because those are very suppressive medications. Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely an interesting conversation to have with an MD.
Yeah.
because I do think, you know, they're almost opposing philosophically in a lot of ways. So I appreciate, you know, the fact that you've done your research and mm-hmm. you know, learned quite a bit about all of these more unconventional, but were conventional prior yeah. to yeah. prior to the Rockefellers, as you mentioned. But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, many of the tools that we have adapted and kind of the allopathic, osteopathic medicine is, you know, it's like it's nuclear weapons, you know, steroids, prednisone, high dose prednisone, nuclear weapons. I mean, immunotherapies for a lot of for cancers and autoimmune diseases, nuclear weapons. I mean, look at the list of side effects. You know, we're going to suppress every immune response in your body to deal with one area, maybe, you know, some autoimmune attack on your intestinal lining. And we're going to suppress all the immune response. So you're going to be more susceptible to every pathogen on the planet. Your immune system's not going to be as capable at recognizing, identifying, and eradicating cancer cells. We can't use the nuclear weapons and because of the collateral damage that they cause in the human body, you know, an antibiotic for every little sniffle and, you know, wheeze, all the damage that we've been doing in traditional medicine. I mean, it's starting to come home to roost for the mistakes, the hubris, the arrogance of my profession. I mean, you know, I'm a big supporter of alternative care because I like to say you guys have a real advantage over the medical profession is you can't prescribe drugs. Count that good. You're just not going to spend a lot of time eventually deprogramming yourself as the FDA removes that drug because it killed, you know, like Vioxx, 100,000 people in 2.5 years or all the other drugs that have been approved and then removed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I actually took Vioxx.
Oh, did you really?
Vioxx.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Many years ago, but yeah. Yeah.
So many stories like that, the mistakes that we have made in medicine because we trusted the pharmaceutical industry to tell us the truth about the studies that we were doing. You know, we trusted them to not have a financial conflict of interest in a corporation who just by nature is a sociopathic culture of, you know, fraud, greed, and corruption.
Absolutely. So I'm with you 100%. And I think we could continue talking in that vein for a long time, but I do want to give people offer some hope. So where do they go from here? If they are experiencing some of the long haul symptoms, perhaps even adverse effects from receiving COVID vaccines, what kinds of things can they do to help improve their health at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so one of the best resources online is the Frontlines Critical Care Collaboration. They've really become a evidence-based dissemination of high integrity, their recommendation. So if you go to flccc.net, you'll get to the website that I'm talking about. They have treatment protocols there. You don't need a doctor for most of those. Most of those things are, you know, the dose and the frequency of vitamin D, the dose and the frequency of curcumin, quercetin, et cetera. The how to, you know, and they have really great teaching materials and protocols that explain each one of their recommendations, what the evidence is based on, how it works. So you can really start to educate yourself on those different treatment protocols. We've taken a lot of those. We've turned them into, you know, like a blister pack of anti-inflammatories that we use, you know, because I'm like most people, if it's five or six bottles, you know, you get beyond five bottles that I've got to open up and pour into my hand. And, you know, beyond five, I'm not going to do it. It's just, I don't have time. And so I'm a doctor, so we're kind of notorious for being non-compliant. But we started creating those blister packs that have the key nutrients that you need for, you know, decreasing inflammation, supporting your immune system. You can go to meehanmd.com and you can see our autoimmune pack, our inflammatory pack. And you can always trust like the supplements that I list on my website. I don't make much money on supplements. My attackers want to say, oh, you're just, you know, selling supplements. Yeah, I am selling supplements because, you know, two reasons. Number one, because they work and we have a really solid evidence for it. Number two, it's hard to send a patient to the store, you know, and say 20,000 units or 10,000 units of a vitamin D3 with K2 or 4,000 milligrams of omega-3 in a high quality, you know, fish oil or some other source of omega-3s, because there'll be 40 or 20 products there. And you're going to, like me, I'm just an analysis paralysis. I want to do research. So what I've done is I've done all that research. We have the evidence-based, you know, highest quality, lowest price, best formulations. You know, a lot of supplements. You can have supplements that are made like by a five-star chef, and you can have supplements that are made by a hack in the back of a joint. I don't know what what the worst side of that spectrum is, but you know, it's you want really good formulations that have the right cofactors. You know, if you're going to supplement for your thyroid, you want some iodine, not too much, not too little. But you want selenium and you want tyrosine. And so you got to flavor that, you know, that entree properly. And so we have done all that research. Like I said, I've done nutritional fellowships and know a lot, you know, the 2 weeks in medical school was definitely not enough. And so I've done, you know, many years of training, and I know how to select good supplements. And for 20 years, I've been trying to find the best source. I use a lot of them. And I want to have the best quality that I can find. So we've found those. We put them on our website, and you can find the best omega-3, coenzyme Q10. That's a part of the treatment protocol. It's also going to, you know, whether you're sick, long COVID, or you just want to be optimally healthy, pretty much the same stuff you would be using, you know, high dose omega-3, coenzyme Q10, NAC, maybe some melatonin as you get older and your natural melatonin levels start to decline. Those are the things that you can find at flccc.net. You can find high quality versions of those at meehanmd.com. You can, even if you're lazy and non-compliant, you can find blister packs that put it all together and make it easy. So you can just grab two of those, one for the morning, one for the evening, and you're more likely to get those good nutrients in your body, support your body's natural processes, and trust your body and its beautiful, perfect design to, you know, to heal and, you know, not have to have things cut out of your body and, you know, nuclear weaponry pharmaceuticals deployed with all the collateral damage that they cause.
Absolutely. And for our listeners today, anybody who would like to order some of those, they can go to meehanmd.com and enter the code community at checkout for 10% off. So Dr. Meehan, what is your why? Why do you do this? Why have you stepped out?
Yeah, because I'm first and foremost, I'm a follower of Christ. I believe that we are, you know, we have to always, you know, take the hard road. We have to, you know, Satan fell and the angels with him, the fallen angels fell because they pridefully couldn't do what God asked them to do. Well, God asked me to go into medicine to prevent disease. I started off my career, you know, like many arrogant, shallow narcissist that was just, you know, serving myself. I went into the most elite specialty that I could go into. Spent the first 5 years of my career in ophthalmology. It's a great field of ophthalmology, but it was limiting. I was, you know, paid a lot to treat the end stages of disease and nothing to prevent the disease. And then I started, you know, as a medical editor of a medical journal, and I started seeing really overt fraud and corruption, studies not being published because they cast doubt on the Merck's MMR vaccine, or, you know, I saw the fraud being published, and anything that, you know, didn't conform to the scientific consensus, you know, not being published. And I said, this is just wrong, you know, and I think God made me a fighter. You know, I'm Irish. I guess that's a part of it. I'm a high level martial artist, you know, fifth degree black belt. I never shy away from a fight. I love fighting the devil. And I see the devil and that the spiritual warfare that he's waging on our population. And very clearly, God told me at one point, I mean, you know, not audibly, nobody would have heard it, but I know it was the Holy Spirit speaking to me. He said, I went through my own health issue long time ago, low hormones, pituitary trauma from being punched and kicked in the face as a fighter. And I was really struggling in the darkness of that health dilemma. Of course, I go to the doctor and I get put on 5 or 6 medications, get side effects from all of them. But the clarity that I got is this is how the enemy is preventing you from hearing my voice. He's poisoning you. You know, I was eating all the wrong foods, drinking Mountain, got addicted to Mountain Dew when I was in residency program. I didn't even have a soda pop until I was probably 18 or 19, in my first year at West Point. And then I started, you know, bounced off the walls, but pretty soon I was pretty addicted to it. And the message was this: the enemy is poisoning the population. He's making you sick. Your profession is participating in it. Many of these people don't have, you know, they don't have a psychiatric disease. They have inflammation going on in their body. Your profession is just putting band-aids on these problems, and worse, they're using powerful psychotropic drugs. They're not fixing the root cause. And I left my ophthalmology practice. I really started retraining and everything. I'm really big on hormone replacement therapy because that's what I needed. I became an expert in it. I can see that's, you know, a primary attack of the enemy. You can see infertility is on the rise. Gardasil vaccine was destroying the ovaries of young women and the testicles of young men. Before the COVID vaccines, the Gardasil vaccine was one of the most hormone disrupting and destroying vaccines on the planet. But now it's the COVID vaccine. But it was, they've been poisoning it with glyphosate and endocrine disrupting chemicals. So we have this, we have these big corporations that are poisoning us. And in that process, we all become inflamed, fat, sick, you know, depressed. And the solution is never going to be a pill. You know, it's the pills are going to make it even worse most of the time. And so I set about just helping people to get out of that darkness, get off of many of their antidepressants, psychotropic drugs, getting children off of, you know, ADD medicines and, you know, 5 antidepressants and a whole list of psychotropic drugs. I started seeing more and more of the spiritual warfare that was going on. And I said, yeah, God, I will obey. I'll be obedient. If you call me, send me, I'm here. And so my focus now is to, you know, get people out of the darkness of that disease process that we're just simply often making worse, especially in primary care medicine. And that's my why. I'm here to serve God, get people healthy again so that they can fulfill the purpose for which they were perfectly created. And by the way, prayer is a huge part of that. Some of the best medicine that we have is prayer. Believe in miracles, pray for them. They happen all the time. And we should, you know, it's the most powerful medicine there is. It's better than placebo. It's been even studied by the NIH.
Yeah, you said something really interesting and poignant for me personally, from my own perspective. So, you know, when my son first became very ill, the conventional approach was antibiotics until the age of 18, as well as perhaps different psychotropic drugs or things like that. But the consensus seemed to be that there was a lot of lean towards this is a mental illness kind of a thing versus, you know, that there was actual physical issues behind what was going on for him in the brain. And so You know, I do think there's this whole stigma that we've, you know, created. Maybe it's as a result of psychiatric medicine. I'm not really sure where this initiated, yes. but ultimately, you know, we have this whole idea that, you know, we can fix some kind of chemical imbalance, which is right. What is typically said, by putting something over top of it, you know, giving a drug instead of really addressing what's going on in the body physically. So I know that I'm seeing a lot of, actually a big rise in a lot of these kinds of, one might say, is mental illness. Do you have any thoughts on that as far as, you know, is there stuff going on with COVID that's initiating some of that? Is there, is this vaccine induced? Is it environment? What's your opinion?
How long do we have?
I know.
Well, you know, I will tell you, and I've done a lot of research and I wouldn't say anything that I couldn't support in court, but I think number one, we start damaging our children on the first day of life with a hepatitis B vaccine. That is, you know, that neurotoxic dose of aluminum being delivered to a newborn is ridiculous for a disease that we know the mother doesn't have. The only child should ever get a hepatitis B vaccine is a child that is born to a mother that is infected with hepatitis B. We test every mother born in the United States. We know whether she has positivity. She has surface antigen positivity for that virus. It's a virus that a child is not going to see until they're old enough to use IV drugs and visit prostitutes. It's a bloodborne disease. They're not going to see it in any significant level. And we have, you know, we can prevent it too. I believe in the power of the immune system. But you go from, it's the childhood vaccine program that starts the damage to brains, the bodies, the spirit of our children. We're at an unprecedented level of untested, no placebo control, tobacco science level of retrospective observational studies being used to support the unsupportable. And, you know, it's interesting, during the pandemic, I'm now seeing people like Pierre Corey, Peter McCullough, brilliant minds that are never questioned it, because we're taught not to question it. You know, it's only because of the Holy Spirit speaking into me and God putting me through, you know, exposing me to things that revealed the truth, that I woke up so many years ago. And it feels like I've been a, you know, voice in the wilderness. And there's, you know, there's many other before me: Sherry Tenpenny, Larry Pavlesky, Paul Thomas, Mary Holland, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, presidential contender in the Democratic Party. I mean, there's, you know, Del Bigtree, the list goes on. But for many of the brainwashed and indoctrinated members of my profession, they didn't wake up until COVID. And, you know, I heard Peter McCullough early in the pandemic. We were on a panel together, and he was saying something, blah, 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 about the childhood vaccines and how much, you know, good evidence that we have for them. And I stopped him. I leaned forward and I said, Peter, you know, wait, hold on. You haven't looked at them. You haven't looked. I'm going to tell you, as somebody, and I respect you, I know you respect me, I've looked at them for 20 years. I've looked at the preclinical trials, you know, the post-marketing studies. They are pulling the wool over our eyes. They haven't done the gold standard quality science that you would expect. And when you look at it as I have, you will come to the same conclusion that I have. They are tobacco science. And we all need, all physicians need to go back and look at what they tested. You know, hepatitis B, 147 children that were followed for no more than 5 days. That's not a study that should put that drug on the market, but that's what was done. And it was administered children as old as, you know, 10 years of age, and they're giving it to preemies. When you look at that, the level of fraud and corruption, and the way our government, who is, you know, judge, jury, and executioner on everything vaccines, because they promote them, they preside over the court system that was created in 1986 when we gave the pharmaceutical industry immunity. You know, there is too many conflicts of interest in this entire system. And so anyway, childhood vaccines, they begin the damage to our children. Vaccines cause autism, no question about it. Vaccines cause SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, no question about it. The cover-up is elegant, I'll give them that, but they cause these problems. And nobody else, they'll tell you, no, we've tested them. No, you lied. You lied in the 2004 JAMA Pediatrics article, you know, study that said that the MMR vaccine was not associated with autism. you lied about it. And guess how we know? Because the lead scientist on that study, William Thompson, came out and told us in 2014, and you still won't let him testify before Congress. And it's, you know, so it's that, it's one thing after another. You get the body damaged, and then you try to put Band-Aids on it, you know, and usually those Band-Aids are a $3,000 a month immunotherapy or more cancer treatment. You know, the explosion in autoimmune disease, cancer, and just poor health in America is a national tragedy and an embarrassment. And we're just pretending like we don't know what it is. It's a whole bunch of things, maybe, but it's not the vaccines that we know. No, start with the vaccines. It's right there. And it, you saw what they did during the pandemic. You saw what they did. Absolutely crap studies, you know, 8 mice to approve emergent, you know, to extend emergency use to children for a virus that they're statistically zero risk of dying for. And now what's happening? Well, you know, all these people dying suddenly, it must be climate change. It must be something else. But, you know, the other thing that we did during the pandemic is that we created social isolation. You know, we locked down, we masked, we did things that just isolated. And, you know, humans should not be isolated. We are social creatures, and they separated us. They locked us in our basements, and we're seeing in isolation, you know, it comes back to the spiritual warfare. In isolation, boy, the enemy's got you. You know, he separated you from the crowd. He shut down our churches. He, you know, kicked you out of school. And now you're just lingering. You're languishing in the basement playing video games. You know, you've just lost your purpose, and you're being fear-mongered. It's democide. It's death by government. And I think they've got to be held accountable for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, so much of what we're seeing now, especially in young adults and teens, is a result of this kind of very damaging sort of isolation and dehumanization, really, is what it is. You know, we now, you know, we interact virtually instead of in person. And, you know, those interactions are, you know, by nature, way more impersonal than, yeah, you know, if we were in, you know, you say things online that perhaps you would never say to somebody's face, you know, but, you know, it's emboldened people to the point of our own detriment, you know, because now we're saying these things that are really damaging, you know, to ourselves and to others. But also interesting. So you spoke about Mary Holland, and I just interviewed Zoe O'Toole, who she's been a friend of mine for a long time. So if anybody's interested, who's listening,
read that book,
read Turtles All the Way Down. Zoe O'Toole has been a great friend of mine for a long time. She and Mary Holland co-edited that book. It's a great one on the history of these vaccines, and an interesting story as to how it came about as well. So
I'm definitely going to watch that. I'm a huge fan of that book. It's a game changer, and it's really probably the most robust, comprehensive analysis of this whole issue. We have been so defrauded by the false narrative that they created around all of this, you know, childhood vaccines, you know, from polio, smallpox, you name it. There's a false narrative underlying all of that, and we really bought into it. It's the same. They're trying to do the same kind of thing with what's happening right now with the biggest tragedy in the history of medicine is what we're going through right now. You know, everything from the mistakes with masks and lockdowns to this experimental gene therapy that's causing so much harm. Yeah, I mean, but that is a great book. Mary Holland is an amazing, you know, she's a purpose-driven individual. I don't know Zoe personally, but I know Mary Holland. In fact, Mary Holland and I debated a table full of pediatricians in Brooklyn, New York during the measles outbreak several years ago. And I think it was 2019. And they got destroyed, just threw a temper tantrum because they realized that we knew what we were talking about. We had the receipts, we had the evidence, we had the knowledge, and they did not. They had propaganda and marketing pamphlets. And so Mary and I have fought in the trenches together, locked shields, and defeated the enemy.
That's awesome. Yeah. So before we go, I always like to give a little bit of parting words. So anybody that is listening who might be struggling with long COVID or autoimmune conditions or maybe some mental health issues or hormone issues. What might you say to somebody who's struggling with their health right now?
Yeah, well, just, you know, trust your body's ability to heal and recover. You got to give it the right things. You need those raw materials that your body needs to heal. And you also need to keep the bad things out. So, you know, one of the things that we do at mehanmd.com is I point you in the direction of this framework I've created called Mindset. And it's, you know, it's an acronym for the 7 key elements of health, wellness, and vitality. M for microbiome, I for inflammation control, N for nutrition, D, detoxification, S, sleep, E, exercise, and T, total hormone balance. And so, you know, your most of what you need to do, you can do yourself. It starts with food, targeted supplements. The information is all out there online. The same stuff that I had to retrain myself in, it's available online. You can have better knowledge than many of your doctors have. I mean, yeah, they know a lot about Vioxx or, you know, prednisone, but they don't know, they know nothing. 2 weeks of nutrition training in medical school, that's about what they know. And that's, it's so poor, but you are in more control of your health than you realize, but you're going to have to start eliminating some of the toxic exposures, get the Wi-Fi off, get the cell phone out of your pocket. You know, if your brain is foggy, your libido is non-existent, you're aging faster than you should, think about getting your hormones tested. You know, I look at hormones as they're a primary attack of the enemy. The enemy is trying to depopulate us. And I'm, you know, all enemies. They want fewer of us because we're useless eaters. But a primary attack is on our hormones, the endocrine disruptor, and are prolific in our environment. Get your hormones tested. And that's an area where I can really help. So if you come to menmd.com, get a hormone test, I'll tell you what we're finding there and what we can do to improve it. Because there's a lot of things that you can do with just diet, just targeted supplementation.
Absolutely. I love that. So people who are looking to reach you, they can find you at mehanmd.com. And just to reiterate, anybody looking to purchase anything from your website can use the code COMMUNITY, COMMUNITY, to get 10% off. So thank you so much, Dr. Meehan. It's been a pleasure. And I think I heard a topic for another interview. So
good. Yeah, let's keep talking. Let's keep trying to help people.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.